Sweet, we're live. Yeah, this is gonna be. I mean, I'm really excited about this one. It's we were struggling to not get into the weeds before hitting records, which is usually a good sign for the conversation that's about to come. So we just decided to hit record and really just take you along the conversation that we're gonna be having here. Because really something that I was gonna add before I hit record, Steve, is that I'm also learning definitely in our last episode where I was in the middle. I'm still in an emotional process, but then I really felt I was really deep into it. And the beauty of this process is that I've noticed that it tends to create a lot of opening and openness. That really came through in the last episode we did, because I really started to understand that, oh wow, there's a lot of, it's kind of cringe to admit, but sometimes I fall for the illusion that I understand a lot of things when it comes to these spiritual ideas. And the recent experiences have definitely confronted me with the fact that I don't quite have a clue, actually. But the beauty is that it opens me to listen so much more. And now I am starting to discover why I'm so excited in the first place to have these conversations with you, because I feel there's a lot for me to learn. And it's just amazing to have someone like you on the other side for me to be able to ask questions to. So I love that we're getting to the cadence that we have set out to do for our meetups, which is like the once a month. And the topic that we're about to open might take us several takes to cover, but I feel there's something that you're also quite excited about and that you have a lot to share about. So we'll frame the conversation, we'll head into it and give it the space that it just takes up, and then we'll see however many episodes we end up doing on the topic. So I'm very excited to get started, and I'm very excited to see what I'll learn from you in these next couple of conversations.
Well, you don't get to hear the conversations I have with friends post our conversations. And you, while it may seem sometimes in this discussion, especially in the last episode, it very much was me guiding and you following just because of the space you were in. But I'm as much a novice in these areas as you are. I just have more miles under my feet, both literally in terms of, running, and then also I'm just in age. So, but I'm still a big absolute beginner. And personally, from my worldview perspective, I think that's the point, is that we're supposed to be attempting to learn what it means to be human while we're human. And our modern culture has so obsessed with knowing and capital T truth. And our sports culture is so focused on winning or getting a time, reaching a goal, if you will. What we call a results-driven experience rather than a process-driven experience, that we tend to privilege those who seem to know. I'm a fool. I'm a proud fool. And I will be a fool till my end of my days. I have some ideas and some thoughts and some things I like to share, but I don't know. I don't know anything. And I just... I honor your vulnerability, and just to kind of wrap this little piece up and then segue us into the next section, the reason I reached out to you in the first place, because I could sense your openness, that you were one of few interlocutors I could find who was willing to consider something deeper that can happen in the experience of running than what 99% of what we're presented with are. And you're a entrepreneur, you're a small business person trying to find a way to do this in an effective, results-based way, because that's how we make money, but also tapping into deeper emotional, spiritual, whatever you want to call it, spaces. And so just this topic is especially exciting for me because this is how I found you. You did a podcast with MEP. I forget. I don't know his name. I don't follow him quite so much. Yeah, Ryan.
Ryan Holmes.
Yeah, and you were on that podcast, and I heard you come talk with him, and I don't think I got halfway through the episode before I turned it off and went right to your podcast. And then I just listened straight through to about 10 of your podcasts. And
wow, I didn't realize you found me through Ryan.
And was completely, I knew I had to reach out to you. That's why I stalked you on Instagram, because I know you felt in a way like you were a little bit worried. Who's this strange man from Texas stalking me on Instagram? I haven't stalked many people, but I stalked you. Like I sent you multiple messages, and they were not short where they come to you. They were long and involved.
Yeah, honestly, I can't recall too much anymore, so it mustn't have been that bad. I definitely don't have a...
Yeah, well, I think you waited a little while before you replied to each of them, which could be just the way life goes, but it could also be like, this is heavy. But anyway, we're going to talk about today. Yeah, what we're going to talk about today are some of the core concepts that I reached out to you to say, hey, I'd love to really go deeper here, because I could tell that you were still new in the podcasting realm, and you were trying to figure out if you could create content, if you could disperse quality spiritual content, which I don't think you were framing as spiritual, but I think deep in your soul it was still spiritual. And then please don't take offense at this word. You kind of gave up on it, and you kind of moved into more of what do people want. And you know what? I say, fuck it. Fuck what people want. I don't want to give anybody what they want. I want to give them what they need. That's my view. And personally, and I'm old enough to be confident that what I'm saying is what people need. But it's not capital T truth. I don't have the answers. I just have more and more avenues of pursuit for us to consider, because I've been down this road a lot. And the way that we've been doing it, the way that our sport does it, the way the culture does it is wrong. It's twisted. It's not allowing us to have the kinds of experiences that we're really, really hoping to have. And your podcast was one of the very few places. And then the fact that you were so young, again, age is relevant but irrelevant as well. Just, I knew you were someone I needed to talk to. So that's how we got here. And then for you, four episodes in, to say, hey, let's reach out to some of these other topics that I'm like, oh yeah, I'm on. Immediately when you sent it to me after our last message, I was like, yes, 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 yes. So anyway, that was a long preamble just to say, I'm really happy to be here, as I always am with you. But this is why I reached out to you in the first place, because the kinds of things we're going to be talking about here are things people aren't talking about. No one's talking about them. And whether it's framed from a spiritual perspective or not is irrelevant. These are practical. If you take these concepts and you think through them and you apply them to your day-to-day life practically, as an athlete, as a runner, your pursuit, your performance will be enhanced, no doubt. Mm-hmm. There are also, it's also working at multiple levels. Many multiple levels, when we go through these four principles, they'll show up in other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I still do remember the moment that you were reaching out, or one of the things I remember about it was that I was like, wow, nobody has been that enthused about my episode so far, or definitely not the solo ones that I did. And I was like, oh, I must be such a, like, I don't know if loser's the right word, but that's what comes to mind. I must be such a loser for recording solo podcasts. Like, who am I to think that these are going to be of interest to anyone? And so I think it's just so cool that you're inviting more of this into the space. And I just feel like there's the biggest shifts in my life have happened after I've started doing things that are very hard for me not to do, whether it's running, whether it was quitting my job, whether it was starting my business, whether it was starting the podcast. And so, and now I'm still just pulling this thread. I don't know where this is going. I know I have a tremendous blast out of these conversations. I would like, I could do these for days. And so And that's why I just followed them. And that's why I'm just very, yeah, I'm just very excited to dive into this topic, to just have someone to like bounce these ideas off of, and to hopefully also be insightful for people listening to this, and also have them, yeah, take away some practical things to apply in their training. And so, yeah, it's, I'm just very excited. And that's where I would leave it for today. And I would just like go and straight, jump straight into the,
let's do it,
the topic we have today. That's okay, cool. So I already set it up in the beginning of the conversation, but what we're gonna start today, we don't really know how long it's really gonna take us to unfold, and it's something that's so near and dear to our hearts that we also are not here to rush it. So I am, however, gonna like frame it so that you have an idea of what's gonna happen between the beginning and the end of this conversation, however long and however many episodes this conversation may last. So that's where I'll start, and then I'll hand it over to Steve, and then we'll just start playing. What I was sharing with Steve before this episode, and something that was a recent realization of mine when it comes to In the Zone, is that I was really struggling to figure out what is it actually that we're communicating with In the Zone. I mean, I have a lot of things that I feel a lot of energy for, a lot of passion for, but I somehow kept circling from, oh no, this is the way I want to communicate, or no, this is the way, this is the way, this is, and then I kept back, coming all the way back to the very beginning. I'm like, why do I keep circling? Like, where's the, let's just pick something and be consistent with it. And it's very funny how it took me so long to realize, but what I started to realize is that, like a very typical metaphor that we have in Eastern philosophy or Eastern spirituality, is the analogy between, well, it's not the analogy, but it's where you have the finger pointing at the moon. And so it's something, I don't know if it was Buddha, I would say it's like a man like a Buddha would have told his pupils, his following, that all he could do was point at the moon. He was not, I'm butchering this. How am I butchering this so hard? All he could do was guide them by pointing his finger, but his finger was not the moon. That's really all I'm trying to say. So, and what that boils down to is that he could give them principles. He could talk about meditation. He could like guide them through saying what they would have to do, but you could never mistake doing the thing for experiencing the moon. Doing the thing, going through the movement is basically the finger, but getting to the place that I simply refer to as the zone, obviously it might be not doing it justice enough, but in the context of running, it works really well. And so the zone is something that you have to experience for yourself, that you can be guided towards by helping you or being helped out by people pointing their finger at the experience of the zone. And so that's what I started to discover, is what I really enjoy so much about the zone. All I'm doing is pointing to the space that we can experience where, it's the spiritual space. It's where you feel at peace. It's where you feel at home. It's where you're naturally curious. Life starts to happen. It's the space that we've all, to some extent, have experienced. And so all I'm doing within the zone is showing how running can guide you back to the space, is that every challenge and everything that you're experiencing is each and every time inviting you to go back to that space. And so the communication is nothing but a series of different fingers pointing at the same moon. It's different principles, different perspectives. Like in the West, we have the Bible. In the East, we have all these, we have the Eightfold Path. We have like, there's just all these different ways to get to the same experience. There's a lot of words for it. There's a lot of principles. There's a lot of theories. And so what we're going to do today is just expand upon, and it's basically what we've been doing all along, I guess, is just to expand upon one of those frameworks to get to that space. And so the framework that we're going to be using in the next couple of episodes has four parts to it. And it also happens to be my operating system for how I move through everyday life. It's It's how, when I don't find myself in the space, I just go through these four points and I ask myself, where can I lean in a bit more? And so the first one is that I practice moving through life and training and racing, for that matter, with no judgment. No judgment of others, but mainly, if you go all the way back to the essence, it's no judgment of myself, which is, I mean, it's ultimately boils down to the same thing. The second one is practicing moving through life, training and racing without expectations. Third one, same thing, for no assumptions. And then the fourth one for me is no lies. To not lie. It really helps me to frame it. And I think it's actually one of the first things that you mentioned, to frame them in the negative. I don't know, I didn't think about this, to frame them negatively, but it helps me because they feel more true to me. It's like not lying is more helpful for me than to be truthful. I don't know why, but... And so these are the four ones that we're going to unpack, and there's a lot that we can say, and this is where I want to leave the intro for the episodes that we have today and that are coming in the future. And now I'm just very curious what Steve has been thinking while I was doing this crazy long introduction.
That was beautiful, though. So in the Western esoteric / Christian tradition, this is called apophatic. So it means using the negation, using the negative to unfold what you want in the world. Because it's so very hard when you're trying to make a positive, you are a finger pointing at the moon. But if I say a shadow, then I don't have to talk about the light. If I talk about, it's sometimes easier to use the negative to get to the root of a thing than it is to use the actual. Because the actual creates many, many questions that then require, you know, judgment, yeah, expectations, assumptions, and lies. So I think that you're really, this is what I sent to you in the initial thread. I think if you go back way back to a year, year and a half ago, 2 years ago, would have said, this is an apophatic path. This is what you're talking about. What the Christian tradition based, you know, right after the Roman Empire fell, was trying to take it to the, how to preserve the wisdom in it. We can discuss Christianity strengths and weaknesses. I come from a Christian experience. I've rejected that, but I'm still open to this is really the current, it's the only spiritual tradition that still is connected to the deepest mystical roots that we have in the West. Every other tradition has been cut off. So we can unpack that at some future date. But this is why I still use the Christian path, because to me it's basically taking Heraclitus, Pythagoras, Parmenides, and these Greek thinkers, pulling them through, what they call the Axial Age, where then Buddhism comes in, and with the Silk Road, all these ideas come in. They sit in Egypt for a while. They become the Hermetic path. They sit in Greece for a while. They become philosophy, although philosophy is, then we take a much more very, very different form of philosophy that comes forward. Mm-hmm. And then Gnosticism / Christianity all comes through this. And eventually around 400, 500 AD, the church says, hey, we got to cut this shit out, because we got to have some kind of system that people can follow. And then that became a path that then came forward. And so much of what was going on in that time came through. So this is a legacy, a tradition that can be counted on. And up the apophatic of the not knowing, or the not knowing path, or the path of recognizing the negation, is one that's in both in the East and the West, as you said. So it's just really useful if we're talking about spiritual things. I also find it to be incredibly useful for runners, because so often what we're doing is we're dealing with missing the mark, which is the term in Christianity for sin, which becomes problematic for us. But as athletes, we have to remove that negative connotation to missing the mark. Like if we miss the mark frequently with distance running is like within a second. If you're on the track or on the road, I mean, in a marathon, people want to go under 3 hours for a marathon. So 3 hours 3:00:00 is a failure, whereas 2:59:59 is a success. Like, that's too narrow to be one thing, to be a positive. The negative is, I did, you know, it's like you have to look at all the space that's sitting around it. So what we do by saying the apophatic or the negative path, the negative view, is that it opens up a lot more space. That's really, I spent a long time just saying, what we're doing here is opening up space for judgment, expectations, assumptions, and lies. So let's, if with your permission, let's transition into judgment for just a second. Let's step one step above this and just say judgment, expectations, assumptions, and lies. These are principles, okay? And they're principles that we all in some way, shape, or form recognize. And we assume that people understand what judgment is, what expectations are, what assumptions are, and what lies are. And this is why I asked you to consider at the beginning that this may take longer. Because what judgment is a very deep historical conversation, a deep spiritual conversation, a deep cultural conversation within the distance running community, and then each of us has to then process it through our own inner experience, our own experience of trying to figure out what that is. And assumptions, expectations, lies, they're similar. I think the first one in judgment, the last one in lies, have the most cultural baggage, but expectations and assumptions have the most practical advantage in terms of a distance runner's experience. And part of that is because of so many people pointing at the moon. So when we talk about judgment and lies, there's just judgment is the moon. And people assume it's the moon. Right? That's the moon. But no one's having the experience of the moon.
Can you elaborate?
Yes. So they're just this, we're pointing at the moon, we're recognizing that there's a disconnect, there's a distance between me and the idea of the moon or the concept of the moon or the thing of the moon. But the closer we get to it, the more we don't recognize the finger pointing at it, the more we assume its reality or assume its dominance, assume its languaging, assume its meaning, assuming its capital T truth. This is obviously true for lies, but for judgment as well. We've got an entire legalistic system that's based on this idea of human rights. I just want to open this door for just a second, because this is one of my favorite topics. There's no fucking such thing as a human right. There's the law of nature. Human rights, humans made up in 1600. Like, there are no fucking, the human species did not even consider a right until the Enlightenment happened. Okay? So judgment sits along this idea that you have a right or some kind of right to what you're doing, in a sense. But anyway, so I'm just saying that, and I don't want to go down that path too far or at all, just to say that the idea, the concept of judgment is very, very deep. But what is the context of? So if I say to you, tell me what judgment is to you, so that if I say no judgment, what are you meaning by that? So what's your direct experience? Mm-hmm. Not worrying about the historical element, but just recognizing from my conversation to you that I know that there's a deep, deep historical, philosophical, spiritual thing there that's probably assumed by you and me too, right? But I'm curious as to say when you're using this, this is the first one of your concepts, no judgment. So it when you came up with it, there was a visceral lived experience you were having that says, that's not the place I want to be. So describe that for us. Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah, and I could not trace it back philosophically, historically, or either of those things. So I could not do that. So I'm going to give an example in a race that I had last year that really, for me, really explains everything I'm trying to point at with this no judgment principle. When I was, I had set out last year to really run a specific time on a specific course here in Belgium. It was an 80K race with close to 4,000 meters of elevation. And I wanted to finish it in 8 hours, sub 8 hours. So it's below the 8:00:00. I wanted to.
The arbitrary time. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, mainly just because for me that symbolized the fact that I would have to be really strong that day, that I, there were some significant steps that I would have to make in terms of my endurance, my strength, my race execution capabilities, all these things. So I was like really, really eager to figure out what does it take for me to get to that point? Can I get to the point? Like, and all the things that would I would start learning in that process. But when race day came, even though I felt very, very strong, I know I was flying through the first half of that race. I think I was like, I know I was halfway through at 3:33:35. So it was like, wow, okay, I have this in the pocket. I'll smash my goal, blah, blah, blah. And then obviously, I think it was only maybe like 15 kilometers, maybe 20 kilometers later. So we were at like the 55 to 60K mark. I really started struggling. And it's like in that moment where, I mean, now reflecting on it, I was not keeping up. Well, the calorie intake that I had calculated wasn't high enough, so below. So I started feeling really low on energy and I had to slow down. But in that moment, I still recall that it was very intense for me to notice how quick my brain was to judge my pacing that I had sustained for the first half of that race. How much it was just like really like pushing me or like beating me down in the ground for being dumb and for not eating enough and for how I am not nearly as strong as I think I am. And who are you to think that you can actually achieve such things in these races? And it's the judgment that I'm talking about now in this principle. It is the judgment that you just find yourself in when things don't go the way you expect. Which, I mean, all of these things, the judgment, expectations, assumptions, the lies, they're all very interconnected to really play off of each other. And what I then notice is that I have a choice. The moment I start noticing the self-judgment, which is definitely not something I always was capable of noticing, but in the moment I notice, then I see this is where the real work starts. This is where the real process begins and where the real beauty of this race. I was not aware of that in this particular case, but it's an awareness that is deepening and deepening. And then now I know when the shit hits the fan and the judgment arises, that is when the real work starts. And that is when I get to the real profound experience in a race. And when the race really shifts from being about a result to being about self-discovery and internal journey and really like reconnecting with a deeper part of yourself and letting go of all kinds of bullshit. So in the space, and when I noticed that, really all I quote unquote have to do is simply be aware of that judgment and not feed it. It's like this analogy with the wolves. Like, I know I'm not going to go into that analogy because I might butcher it again, but there's an analogy where you have two wolves. You have like a good wolf and a bad wolf. And it's the one that you feed that is really ending up being the strongest in yourself. And so I'm just not feeding the judgment wolf. That's again, going to the negative. It's not like I'm actively feeding. I'm not going into, I'm actively going into positive self-talk. That is not really how I approach that. I just let go of the negative self-talk. And so I stopped feeding that wolf. And so what happens is that then all of a sudden, by not leaning into the self-judgment, I create space. And in the space, all of a sudden, there's like a moment of gratitude. It's like, whoa, look at me. How strong have I been performing up until then? Which is before I was lost in the self-judgment. I was a reality, a part of the reality I could not see. It just didn't come through. My heart was too closed off. I was too stuck in my mind trying to perform. And so the more you lean into the no judgment, the more you create space for that openness, the more of these moments of gratitude come. And I know that the most overwhelming experience for me that day really was that there was all of a sudden there started to be so much love that I started to feel for myself for just being out there trying. And so every single step I started taking was like, it was like a gesture towards myself of I am worth it. However slow this step is making me progress, this is what I have to give, and I am worth giving myself everything I have to give. And in that moment, everything just becomes lighter. Obviously, I mean, I don't have to tell you, it affects performance. You start to just gradually speed up again, and I finish that race strongly. But that's not the point. That is not why I do that. It's just the openness it creates in my heart, the beauty of everything that starts to flow, and the playfulness that gets to return. The fact that I now get to think about, oh, what is happening? Oh, it's probably just nutrition. Oh, well, just start eating more then, Kobe. Just let's figure this out. It turns into a play. And that is where the no judgment principle is incredibly, incredibly profoundly practical, but also an immense guiding principle to feel more peace in yourself, because you just decondition the habit of being hard on yourself for no reason at all. Like, there's just not a single benefit of having that judgment as soon as the lights go on. Like, as soon as I am aware of the fact that I'm judging myself, there's no point in having that judgment. I don't need judgment to propel myself forward. I don't need judgment to win races or to perform well. And so that is my lived experience of judgment. That is really, when we talk about judgment, these are the kinds of things that I am talking about. So did that answer your question?
Yes. I just want to ask you a question. The experience of judgment, you stated, I don't have to do this. When you came to the realization, why am I doing this? What is this closing up? Why can I not stay open? I want to click here because this is the piece that many people miss, and it will run through all four of our negative statements. Is there's a measure that you're using before you start that you value. If you didn't have a measure that you were using, 8 hours in this case, just as a clean metric, even though there's probably a lot of things, there's a lot more there. Let's just use the 8 hour number. Okay, this will go right into expectations. So you might be right. We might get through this in an hour. Anyway, but this measurement concept is the part of our modern scientific materialist worldview that doesn't jive with our nervous system's experience of being human or mammalian for hundreds of thousands, if not million plus years, okay? We did not evolve with judgment. When we came into small groups of people who needed to then create order around the chaos that might happen when people act unusually, humans have a different, we've decided this idea of human rights. We have this, I mean, human rights only came into existence in 1600, but it was already, we had, look at the books of the Bible. There's a book of the Bible called Judges. So there were judges, people were judging, right? But it was based on a measure, some kind of measurement. And that happens when people need to figure out order. And the nervous system wants to figure out order. The problem is that the nervous system is operating on an old model, an evolutionary model, and it's not ready to handle all of the complexity of our ability to think through various values of measurement. Do you think your nervous system is capable of just determining whether 8 hours is good or 9 hours is good or 10 hours is good? Like, why would we even think that? And honestly, just to be clear, you pulled that shit out of your ass anyway. It's cultural. It doesn't care. It just wants to keep you safe. I just want to make that aware. So there's a measurement here. There's a measurement here that the nervous system is trying to figure out how to give you the optimal experience it possibly can. It wants you to get under 8 hours, but it wants to keep you safe. So there's a measurement here that's just your conception of this, that when you tick just, and let's use the scales, the Libra scales or the scales of justice, right, as a model. If it's even, it's okay. Or if it's in the positive side where you're getting money, stacks on stacks, and it's like all good, right? But that's what it was at 330, 335 at the halfway point. And then somewhere along the line of that race, the scale started to shift and change. And then the negative started to get higher. And then you have to then start saying why. Why is never a good question. Why in racing, we should never ask the question why. It's a useless question, okay? Unless it's deep purpose, then it can be useful. But otherwise, you got to leave it alone. So that judgment is because you're not measuring up. The judgment's there because Kobe in that moment's not measuring up. So you say it's easy once you decide to throw the measurement away and just experience the experience. But I just want to make clear to our listeners that there's a real reason why that's happening, and it's okay because we need goals. Mm. And goals require measurement. So we cannot jettison it. We are not pure process. Process is always related to a beginning and an end, even though it's all about what's going on between them. So we don't get to say no beginning, no end. It's just open. That's just not how we operate. That's not how humans operate. Okay? It's not. So when we talk about process, I think people get it very confused and they think that process is just always being in the moment. No, it's always being in the present. Whatever is coming up with an idea of what has happened in the past and an idea of what's coming in the future. And then you're going to measure yourself against these concepts, the future ideas, cultural constructs, a past idea of cultural constructs, where you've been, where other people have been, what you think from your training, that's past. Future is where you want to be. I want to be somebody who can do this same route in 7 hours and 45 minutes or 7 hours and 30 minutes, because that shit's never changing. Isn't that so interesting with judgments? Like, as soon as you run 7:59, all of a sudden you're going to want to run 7:45 or some other arbitrary number that's going to be down there, and you're going to create a new scale of justice about whether you're sitting with judgment. So I just wanted to, I know I belabored it a bit, but it's so important for people to realize it's normal and natural and necessary. But when you pivot to the race and the gun goes off, no judgment. Because it does, there's no place there. Because the measurement's going to happen at the finish line. There's no need for measurement in what you're doing. You just want to have the best experience you can, and you can continue to use metrics. I'm not saying you don't use metrics, but you're not using the scales of justice to determine whether you've succeeded or failed. That's not happening. Mm. What's happening is you're just waiting. You're doing the best you can in the moment. Again, here's that super, I use this all the time in my conversations with you. I use it in all my conversations with every athlete. The highest standard for an elite, for any athlete at any level, from the elite to the beginner, is do your best. It doesn't get any more simple than that. If somebody asks me, what's the whole of the sport, 100% of the sport, it's also 100% of the practice. It's just simply, can you do your best? With no judgment, no expectations, no assumptions, no lies, right? All we're doing is we're just working that around. We're talking about that in a different way. But it's I just want to make that clear to you and to our listener that the judgment's happening because we're measuring. Measuring's necessary and normal, but we don't want to be measuring in the context of the race itself because our nervous system is not designed for that. It's designed to keep you safe and to get in the zone and to find a flow state. And so when you're measuring, the flow state can't happen. It can happen when your measurements keep the scales of justice even. But as soon as the scales of justice tick to the negative, your nervous system says, this is what Kobe values. Mm. Kobe is going to continue to push really, really hard. This got 4,000 feet of elevation. There's trouble, or 4,000 meters. I don't know if you just said feet or meters, but either one of them is pretty a lot, right? And so you're going, it knows, it, you know, your nervous system is so smart. It already knows in advance. In fact, I think it may not even know what's going to happen. So it's just trying to check you against that. So the only measurement you need to use, the only judgment anybody needs to use, is what's happening in my internal feeling state. And our analogy of finger pointing at the moon, currently the running space, the race space, is the moon. Just mooning. Racing. Purely racing. Not racing with any other objective other than I know what I'm prepared for. Now, afterwards, you may have to come back and say judgment. You may have to judge afterwards when you run 8:15 or 8:30 or 7:45 or whatever you run. You're going to make some judgment around it, and you're going to process that, and you're going to use that, and that's super useful. It's very important to do those things. Again, you need it at the front end, the back end, but not in the middle.
I would even like for, and that I mean, that's where words or semantics can be helpful, or just the awareness around the words that we use. It's not about the exact, I mean, it doesn't matter whether we, let's say I use analysis for the process, or reflection for the process that comes after. It's not that reflection is the right word for that, or judgment would be the wrong word for that. But what, for me, and the word, the way I use judgment, it's, it has inherently a I was about to say it has a judging quality to it.
Defining it by itself.
Yeah. So judgment inherently has the negative taste that you have towards yourself. It has the putting down energy in it, baked in it. That's how I use judgment.
Punishment.
So would it be fair to
punishment.
It's punishment. It's yeah. And yeah, it's really beating yourself down. And so so just for me to make sure that I understand you correctly, then in my terminology, I wouldn't say I judge myself after the finish line. It would be I reflect upon my experience, which is more like an equanimous looking back on what has happened, what went right, what went wrong, what can I take away, how can I learn from this? But it doesn't have any weight. It's not like, oh yeah, I missed, I didn't do the right calculation, or I under blah, blah, blah. And
so why
is
that?
Okay.
So can you think about that a little bit? Why is that?
Why is what?
Why are you able to be equanimous in that moment when you're not able to be equanimous in the event?
Oh, I'm not even saying I'm not necessarily able to be equanimous after the event, but
you said in your analysis there's a distance, a space, an openness that you had to be able to go through that analysis and think through, and you gave me four or five different feeling state experiences that might be related to that. You didn't use the term data analysis. Yeah. You used a variety of different metrics by which you were going to determine whether the race was successful or not. And even now, you're still judging that event. We haven't even talked about what you actually did, right, in the event. And so you're still kind of processing it, right? But you're processing it from a place of equanimity, of evenness of feel, of relative non-judgment. But in the event... the judgments are happening. So and my question for you, because I think this is really important, can you, I have an idea, I have an answer here. I'm just going to tell you I have an answer. You can say I don't know it, and that's not going to make you a failure. I'm not judging you around that, okay? But what I'm saying is I do think there's an absolute answer of why we're able to have distance, space, and equanimity when we're looking at our results after an event is over, but we're not capable of doing it. And I mentioned it five times in our discussion about what it is, what's going on in our real lived experience when we cannot be equanimous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I think it's just, I think in your terminology, it would be, well, no, I'm just going to give my answer, then you can give your answer. Well, for me, it's the way I would answer that is that it's simply that all of the stories and the entire shitstorm has just settled down, you know? It's like you're no longer in the chaos of the hurricane, and you're like, you're kind of returned to the center of the hurricane, and you're like able to just like beyond the stories, just like objectively observe, oh, what happened, what went wrong. But in the moment of the pressure, there's just all sorts of shit flying around here all over the place that it's like you're so I mean, I think that would be how, yeah, that would be my answer.
Your nervous system is completely okay when you cross the finish line, but your nervous system is trying to process all that shit that you were just talking about in the race itself. This is why I highlight the nervous system. And we can talk about it as a spiritual thing. I don't think so. I think it's absolutely instinctual. And it comes from your gut. I think our gut controls nearly everything that we have. Sometimes our heart can take over when we're really lucky. And our head is when we're really, really doesn't help us very much, except for when we need to do it before and after. And so we don't speak the language of the nervous system. We don't speak the language of the gut. And if you want to get in the zone consistently, you need to be able to speak the language of the nervous system. And this, one of the challenges around this is that this has been framed in a spiritual perspective. And so for people, the only people ever discussing this are people in the sports psych world, sports psychology world. But yet they do it in such a way where it's always results driven. It's always outcome driven. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't fit. Mm. So we get this weird thing of the zone, which fall has this sort of spiritual connotation. Are you kidding me? It's basic shamanism 101. It's like basically being human. And actually, let me reframe that. It's not being human. It's being animal. Not human. Being animal first. And recognizing we are animals first. And the animal's system is going to regulate. But you add on to that animal experience of nervous system regulation, all the bullshit that humans bring to the package, both our heart space of our feelings and our emotions and our experiences and our hope, we're hope for connection. This is shooting around in your head when you're failing in a race. And then all the logical analysis shit that's going on that doesn't help at all. That does, it's totally irrelevant in the space, but it's still, that's all the shit you were talking about. So what I'm saying is, what's going on that's different when you're in your analysis phase? Or your judgment phase, that I called it, and what's going on in the event itself is the nervous system is freaking the fuck out because we do not have the ability mm-hmm. to process effectively our instinctual experience. We are not good animals. Mm-hmm. And this is why mm-hmm. we're destroying our our climate. This is why we're destroying each other politically. This is why we fall into tribes. This is why we do all the things. We're not good animals. If we were good animals, we would figure this out. Animals don't shit where they eat. They do not shit where they eat. Humans shit where they eat all the time because they've got a heart reason and a head reason for why they shit where they eat. And so in our training and racing experience, how do we not shit where we eat? It's by getting clearer and clearer and clearer with your mission and your idea of what you're trying to do, and then also then aligning that with your nervous system and trying to get into training situations that allow it. And then just to go back to no judgment, and how do we tell whether we're succeeding or not? Has judgment arrived in training and in racing? And if judgment has arrived in training and racing, to bring this full circle back to what you said about 30 minutes ago, now you know there's something to work on if judgment is there. Because you're using mm-hmm. the negative to say judgment, problem. Something's not well here. The patient is not well. The experience is not good. Judgment has showed up. So then maybe one of the things that people can work on is like, when I have that experience of judgment, can I locate it in my body? Can I find the place in my body? This is where my idea of three intelligences is very helpful. I've sort of introduced it without introducing it. I think there are three basic intelligences in humans: a gut intelligence, a heart intelligence, and a head intelligence. And we're supposed to use all three in conjunction. And what we do in our world is use our gut at certain times, our heart at certain times, our head at certain times, and we wonder how we fall into the traps that we fall into. How do we fall into judgment? Because you're not doing a good job of circulating the intelligences through the gut, up to the heart, up to the head, back down and back around, and all the things that matter with that. And so if how do you do that? Well, that's another whole conversation altogether, but you knew it when you saw it. You experienced it when you experienced it, and then you're in your analysis, you wanted not to be there, but you were equanimous in your analysis. You were not in that space. Why? Because your nervous system wasn't triggered. Now, you might have a feelings of regret or feelings of sadness, but each day that progresses beyond that, it becomes an opportunity for learning and not a negative experience that's throwing all this bullshit up into your chaos, into your system. Because our nervous systems are designed to try to create coherence and cohesion within our gut and within our instincts. And then our heart and our head can help process that effectively. If it's just gut, it doesn't always work. Look at my dog. My dog does stupid shit because he's just pure instinct. I mean, he's a German short hair pointer, so he's super high energy, and he's like, thinks nothing and just goes. And it's beautiful to see, but it's super dangerous if he's off leash in the neighborhood because he's going to get run over by a car because he does not have any idea what the hell's going on, right? So it's like, if you're pure instinct without the reason of the gut, without the reason of the heart, without the reason of the head, you can have problems. And I think that's what I'm trying to frame here by that pushing you in that conversation, is to see what was missing in the analysis that wasn't missing in the experience, because we privilege mm-hmm. the experience, and we very don't do a good job of relating to our goal or relating to the future data analysis or data reflection we might do. And maybe it's not the right place to do it. And you know, and your work with flow and where you work with zone, the zone, being in the zone, is that it really doesn't, it doesn't fit appropriately. Which is why you've called it no judgment. Mm. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when you were referring to or were you, when you were inviting people to point to locate it in their body. So how would that help them?
Well, what I like to say to people, well, number one, it's to recognize that likely you're overutilizing one system. That's not helpful. Because when our nervous system flares up, this is what we talked about in our very first episode, at the 30K mark of a marathon, your nervous system is going to throw, because you're doing something that's right on the edge of what you're capable of doing. If you have a challenging goal and you're running 26.2 miles, you're going to reach the edge of what's humanly possible. These are the limits. This is why Kipchoge's statement, "No human is limited," is so provocative. Because we're reaching them. And he's like, "No, you don't have them," which is such a, you and I should have a whole episode on Kipchoge's idea of no limits. But this but that idea of theirs, what's happening is your nervous system sending you reminders like, this is trouble. I know you've trained for it. And what you have to be able to do is say, "No, I'm going to bring my heart into the equation now. This is my purpose. I have a purpose to do this. This is part of my process for being human, what I call a path with heart." This is why I think running ultimately, the gut and the head are useful, but they need to be moderated, and the heart is the best place to do it from. And a good running practice is always running from the heart, in my opinion. But you bring it up into the heart and say, "How's my purpose doing?" But a lot of people haven't done any purpose work. They haven't even done any spiritual work. They're really, really confused about what that even means, and it gets messy and ugly, and they're not really sure what's happening with it. So then where do they go? They go up to the head. Oh, good fucking luck. Like, the head should only be making decisions that are very strategic in the moment. This is the right move based on that athlete being right there at that time. But even then, more often than not, in the context of running itself, the gut and the heart are really the only two places. But because people spend so much time in their head, it's useful to find yourself when you're located there. And my guess is your experience in that race, when you got to 3:35 and you were feeling great and wonderful and fantastic, everything was just fine, everything was moving great, then you get somewhere beyond there and it starts to hurt really bad, and your head starts saying, "You went out too fast. You didn't do this. You're not ready for this. I thought I was ready for this," blah, blah, talk, 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 blah, 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 blah. And you push it into your heart. So how do you feel about that? What is your feeling state about that, Kobe? This makes me sad. I so wanted to run 8 hours. So sit there for a second in the sadness and in the emotion. Or I'm angry. Why did I go out so slow? Like, process it in your heart with the emotional energy of it, and then push that energy back down into your gut, and your gut will calm the fuck down, because it's like, Kobe gets it. Kobe understands, because we are unique in the even in the mammalian, you know, classification of having this higher intelligence. Whether we're the only ones or not, I don't know, but we do have it, so not using it is ridiculous. But we're not really designed evolutionarily to utilize it in really, really stressful, challenging circumstances like races. This is the first time I've ever done this, Kobe, is connect the dots between the spiritual and the instinctual. And that much of what's going on in ritual, in old-time religion and shamanistic space, was creating ritual to allow for nervous system flow, for effective nervous system. Warriors going into battle created all these. They did this dance beforehand. They created all these. They did these things to create rituals to allow their nervous system to calm down enough to see the heart space of the desire of the tribe or the desire of whatever needed to happen to execute the war, to die, to be willing to die. Mm-hmm. And when we're racing, when you were trying to go sub 8 hours, you were asking your nervous system to put yourself in a position where you were willing to die. And your head and your heart just were not, they were not aligned. And so then, because your head and heart weren't really aligned, your gut said, "Fuck you, I'm not going to go there." Until you can convince me with the head and the heart that this is an okay thing to do, to continue to allow you to play on the edge of the absolute edge of what's going on. Why does Kilian Jornet do what he does? Why do these athletes, why does Joshua Cheptegei do what he does? Why do these athletes' bodies allow them, their guts, their instincts allow them to go to the edge? How do they do that? Because their heart and their head are aligned with their gut, and they train it consistently. And this is spiritual, but not really spiritual. It seems to me to be basic sports psych 101, and nobody teaches it. This is why I reject sports psychology, ultimately. That's why I've leaned into spirituality, because it's the only place that we have the language to actually operate effectively here. Now, there's another theory called polyvagal theory, which is really helpful if somebody wants to
to pattern this. There's a book by Deb Dana called Anchor that I highly recommend for nervous system regulation. It's based on the ideas of Stephen Porges. It's basically just nervous system regulation. It's excellent stuff, and it's scientific. So those people who don't want to go down a spiritual religious path have an option to use that, but realize that evolutionarily we've always placed this in a shamanistic or a religious context.
We should probably do like an entire episode on nervous system regulation. I think it would be very insightful. I'm by no means an expert on it, but I've definitely, through all my panic attacks and stuff, learned a lot about the importance of nervous system. And also, obviously, through meditation, you learn a lot about these different states of the nervous system. So I would definitely love to also hear your take on that, hearing that you've read these books. But I wanna try to stay on the topic of the
brother.
No judgment.
Sorry.
No, you're good. But I was very curious to hear when you were saying that these professional athletes are capable of doing what they're doing because they have the alignment between the head, the heart, and the gut. But it doesn't occur to me in this moment that that's something that they're doing intentionally or that they're necessarily doing like specific work around.
Well, they don't have to because it's so. They're doing it day to day. They don't. Their lives are. Remember, 99% of the people that you and I are talking to don't do this for a living.
Mm-hmm.
They're dads and moms. They're employees and children. Mm-hmm. They're lay, right? They're not professionals. They run, and they're also trying to balance all these other things at the same time. Joshua Cheptegei, mm-hmm. Killian Jornet, all they're doing is thinking. About all they're thinking about from a professional point of view is aligned with their head, their heart, and their gut. So because their occupation is their vocation, they're blessed and they're gifted, but they're also held to a very high standard. And you know,
it's more so a consequence of the fact that they feel so much connection to this, and that perhaps they had just enough talent to be able to do this professionally. They knowingly or unknowingly find themselves in the place where they naturally can express their heart more, can be more intuitive about.
And that's why I say the nervous system is sort of a spiritual thing, because they're aligned. They're cohesive. They're coherent. There's a coherent. And in us, we're separated. So much separation from the vast majority of the people I work with. They're trying to balance being moms, professionals, and trying to run at a very high level. It's very, very hard to do that. It's very hard. And each one of those things sends you in a different direction. So unless you spend time thinking about how you create coherence in your head, heart, and your gut, it's really challenging and difficult. And this is something nobody ever talks about. But I actually think it's the critical, most crucial piece of the puzzle. And that's why my model of a beautiful race is always talking about nervous system regulation. Because you need the beautiful race is the race in which you care not about the outcome other than you set out an objective, a reasonable objective for an outcome to triangulate you effectively to cover the ground that you want to cover. But you recognize the real benefit is in the journey itself. And then your nervous system doesn't really throw up a lot of challenges unless you turn an ankle or fall down. I mean, what happened if the buddy that you were in had broke his ankle halfway through his PCT? I mean, the event's over. You're not gonna figure out how to finesse a broken ankle. And so then at that point, you would have failed. But would he have said his experience was a failure? Probably not. He just would have said, oh, some drastic thing came into play and then I have to deal with. And of course, now religions or spiritual space or even the shamanistic tradition would have said, oh, a god came in, something broke into reality to create the break that happened, and you can go all this other crazy shit. But all those are just ways of making judgment around why you didn't achieve what you didn't achieve, right? So you know, you've got a moment, a measure. So
would it make sense to, I don't know if that makes sense though in the last 15 minutes, but does it make sense to try to give some pointers for people? Because now I'm also quite, it's not just something I'm doing subconsciously. It's also something that I'm becoming more and more aware of around the power of just alignment in your life, whatever that
Lifestyle
looks like.
The first step is really simple, Cubby.
But what? Okay. Yeah.
Intention.
Mm-hmm.
Intention. Pure and simple. And this is honestly, it's in every tradition that you have. The Buddhists don't do it so much because they think it's all an illusion anyway. But we're not Buddhists. You come from Belgium. You're not Buddhist. You may ascribe to a Buddhist perspective, but you don't have a Buddhist nervous system. Okay? So you don't have an Eastern nervous system. You have a Western nervous system. And so setting an intention, checking in with that intention on a consistent basis, repeatedly day to day, hour to hour, whatever level that seems appropriate for the person with their goal. This is what Kipchoge and Cheptegei and Killian Jornet are doing. Because their day-to-day operations are aligned with that objective, Killian wants to get up and over Mount Blanc at a certain time and a certain place to go from one place to another place, right? And he's going to do it. He doesn't really care what happens with it. But every step he takes, everything he does, every food he eats, everything he does consistently is in alignment with that. Even if he sits down and has a couple of glasses of wine at the pub, right? Ultimately, it's all in alignment. It's all in cohesion to what he's trying to do and what he's trying to accomplish.
So what does that look like for a working mom? So like intention, is that intention on all levels? Is that on the professional, on the being a mom, on the running level?
In order to
be
where
does the intention reside?
So in order to be effective with intentions, you have to start somewhere. You can't start everywhere. So just pick something that matters. This is why I think running, again, is a path with heart, because it allows you to practice the power of intention. And nobody feels weird about setting a goal. And a goal is just an intention. That's all it is. And this will go into next time's episode, which is talking about expectations. I'll have a full-on diatribe around this topic because I'm very, very adamant about goals are not expectations, and they need to be. They're not. They're different things. But when you set a goal, you're setting an intention. I'd like to go under 3 hours at the Boston Marathon in 2024. That's an intention. So then when you wake up in the morning, you say, what am I doing today as a mom, as an athlete, as a wife, as a homekeeper? Now, I'm not saying a woman is the homekeeper, but as one of the people in the home tidying up, cleaning up when dishes are all over everywhere. I mean, anybody that's left that to the end of the night at 9 o'clock at night knows there's nothing more to throw you out of alignment right before you go to bed than shit all over everywhere, right? So it's like, how are you creating your intention to run sub-3 at the Boston Marathon checks your decision-making. Do I need that second glass of wine at 7 o'clock at night? Now, maybe you do because of stress in your life, but maybe you don't if you're thinking about sub-3 hours for a marathon. So all these aspects of your life start to shift in alignment with sub-3, and it's easier and easier to make those decisions when you made the first decision. So it keeps happening over and over again. And then the rest of your life sort of gets infected with your intention. And this is where prayer comes from. Okay, we got intention. It's just a desacralized prayer.
Can we try to stick to the steps, because we're definitely gonna do this when we go into prayer. I know for sure that we're gonna digress too much. Can we try to? So we have intention now. I think I'm starting to get a grasp of intention, and we're trying to get to that ultimate quote unquote state of alignment that would really help us perform powerfully on race day. So from intention, where do we move?
You just bring it up over and over again. So decisions that are crucial, when you have a decision that needs to be made that may impact sub-3 for, because if you ask this question in September, it's not very relevant. If you say, my intention is sub-3 at the Boston Marathon in 2024, and you make that intention at September 23rd of 2023, it can be a strong intention. And it gets stronger as it goes, but it's so far away from its magnetic force, from its place of finish, that it's hard. But a month out, like where we are right now, for everybody trying to run Boston, believe me, their intention is very strong. However, they don't have intention, they don't have enough. I like to use the analogy of taking coins or stones and putting them in a vessel. So every time you make an intention, I'm going to run sub-3 for an hour. And how am I going to do that in this next workout? I'm going to cover this workout at this paces and this thing. Drop it in. Succeed or fail on the paces, doesn't matter. Drop the intention in. If you successful on the performance, drop 2 rocks in it. There's ways to do this. We can go into a whole episode where we break that all down. But I just want to give you a short version of it is you just make decisions on a consistent basis with that intention and seeing if those choices align with it. Again, the second glass of wine at 7 o'clock at night, the second beer, third beer at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, which probably is not going to impact you unless you're sober, it's probably not going to impact you in a negative way, but it will impact your intention. So there's a power suck there. There's a leakage. You really don't care about your sub-3 hour time. You wanted the glass of wine more. So the intention is not strong. When you say, no, I don't want that second glass of wine because 3 hours makes a difference to me. Now, the relevance of your decision in the moment is not, many people will get, I talk to this about with people and they get really obsessed with whether 1 glass of wine or 2 glasses of wine is appropriate or not. That doesn't matter. What matters is it aligning with your intention? And very quickly, when you start doing intention for, let's say, at bare minimum, 7 days, but if you get to 21 days of making an intention and sticking with an intention, where you at least think about it once or twice a day for every day for 21 days, you will no longer have any question about whether or not an action that you could choose will be aligned with or not aligned with your intention. You will know it in your gut. You will know it in your heart, and you'll know it in your head. And there'll be, and again, now you've got this in 3 intelligence alignment that's working out. And then because of that, there'll be times where your intellect says, no, a second glass of wine is fine. So maybe if you just got fired at work, maybe you just broke up with your boyfriend. Maybe if something just happened or your husband just told you that he really wants to make love tonight and that second glass of wine could really, really be helpful. There's no problem. That will align just fine with your decision to have that second glass of wine. So it's not like a absolute decision. It's just, what are you doing in your life to achieve the goal that you want to achieve? And the goal itself, I just want to remind people, this is coming from our second episode, Kobe. When you reach the finish line and you have the satisfaction of reaching a goal, it's not the number that you're chasing. It's the feeling state at the finish line that you're really looking for. And when you make a choice of aligned with intention on a given day, you are having that feeling state before the race happens. You're having that feeling state and you're feeling the flush of, oh my God, I made a choice today that aligned with the choices that I really want to make of going sub-3 at Boston. I now want it more. And that feedback loop, baby, human beings and feedback loops, whoo, we are really good at keeping the ball rolling once we start getting on that. We're also really good at getting the ball rolling on bad habits that create more and more challenges for doing that. So the practical is perhaps the best way to say it is to write down your goal, write it down in paper, put it in 2 or 3 places where you can see it, and then make sure at least twice a day you're checking in. There should be no problem if somebody's running 5 or 6 days a week to see it at least 5 or 6 times a week. And that will help. If you can see it 10 times a week, that will help more. If you're now making decisions in the context of that intention, it'll get stronger and stronger and stronger. Now, one of the questions that comes here is, how about the power of your intention? And this is a really important thing to think about is you don't want to pick a weak intention. So you want to pick something that really resonates. And that resonance needs to resonate across a variety of different contexts. So in this situation, I'm talking about a mother who might have a successful job. She's a very happily married woman to her husband, and she has two kids. You want to be able to make sure that sub 3 hours at Boston can resonate on waking, on doing your workout, on being a mother, on being an employee/a boss, and then on being a wife and how that fits. So if that will hold through and you can hold that space while you're being the mother, while you're being the wife, while you're being, it'll empower you more and more, and then that will really, without knowing it, it'll be aligning the head, the heart, and the gut. You will really be aligned. And if you're wondering when you have decisions to make around, I don't really want to do my intention, like that intention is no longer relevant for me just in this particular moment, then using your head, your heart, and your gut is a great way to check it. Like, why do I not want to have it? Well, my husband just said he wants to make love, and a second glass of wine really, really helps. So why not? It's, you know, I don't know what I mean. I'm not trying to make light of that. I'm just trying to say we all know we want to be in the mood. You want to be in the zone, right? So how do you get in the zone? And that's not good. In your heart, you'll metabolize that not being in intention with an intention to also be cohesive and coherent with the other values and goals that you have. Because Kipchoge, he doesn't even live with his family. He has his family living in a city of Nairobi while he lives out in the middle of this valley, out of the middle of nowhere, cleaning toilets, okay? He's living somewhere else to not make that choice. We don't have that. So we have to have intention to get us there.
So how does this then translate into, because ultimately what we're talking about here is getting to the race with a regulated nervous system, right? Because I can see this go two ways. And again, we're not going to have the space to unpack all the details of this, but how this, like, if you're that, like, it can easily turn into obsession too. So how do you make, and then you can have a very dysregulated nervous system at the starting line, and you can start to freak out about all these things that I was freaking out about. And then you have, like, you're programming the judgment in your system by being obsessive about your intention. So
if you push it through your heart, you're not going to be obsessive about it. You just use the other intelligence. And that might be another area to really push and say, how do we use these three intelligences effectively? This is where I start. When I work with high school kids, this is the place I start. Because they have no ability to deal with or manage their nervous system. And they don't even know what the nervous system is. So you just want to push it. You need to push the thought or the idea or the fear or the judgment or whatever it is down or up that three, there's those three areas. And because if you're obsessing, the heart will melt it. It won't work in the heart. Now, the one problem we may have with many people that are listeners, I don't think any of our listeners, but this may be a problem if I were trying to teach this all of a sudden out of a box in a group of semi-elite athletes, is that they don't have any real concrete understanding of the gut or the instinctual areas and how the nervous system is regulating. But if you give me 10 minutes, I can probably make it pretty painfully clear to them pretty quickly. But one area that's really hard in our world is the heart. We are disassociated from, we are in a place of separation. And we have a myth of separation that's running our society, that we all think because we have the headphones on and we're sitting in our room. There are people who would think that the two of us are not in the same space. And anybody that thinks from a heart perspective that you and I are not currently in the same space is not listening to this conversation. I don't know. You're somewhere in Europe, and I'm somewhere in the United States, and we are absolutely currently residing in the exact same space. That's a heart space. That's a field, a heart field. And so those who can get with that and not get too intellectual about it, or not get too instinctual of, no, I'm not, I'm right here, or intellectual like, well, where is anywhere ever being anybody ever? Well, no, I know I'm here with you. I know we're together. So that could be a challenge for people, the heart space. But my high schoolers do not have a problem with this. They're all in love anyway, right? And they're running their instincts through their heart already. They're trying to regulate the human species at, you know, 15 years, 13, 14, 15 years old, as all the hormones start pushing. All this gut is saying sex, 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 sex. They push it up through the heart. And that's why you have all this romanticism, all this love, all this flowering. And people are like, and then our teachers are like, well, think through it. Use your rationality. It's like, okay, but we have to develop the heart. But I don't even know if our kids are doing that anymore. I don't know that that's happening. I do think that we have a relative weakness of heart intelligence. But I can usually tap into it with people. And anybody that's running and connecting with a community on a start line, or feeling the feels in a race, seeing a sunset and recognizing the beauty of the sunset, that is not an instinctual or intellectual space. That's a heart space. Awe is a heart space. So I would say that it's just getting good at regulating and understanding what those are. And each of us are going to have a different proportion. Some of us are going to be more instinctual. Some of us are going to be more heart. And some of us are going to be more head. The vast majority of our listening all of us in the West are primarily head related, and we're really operating in the head. And that's evolutionary. We have all of our major sense organs are in our head. I mean, our eyes, our nose, our mouth, our ears. I mean, four of the five critical, crucial senses are happening in this tiny bit of real estate up here. So it makes sense. But we have to push it down into these other two areas. And then you get good. And I think ultimately, at the end of the day, the heart is the regulator. It's the final arbiter and the final place that the metabolism, or in the ancient or in the old Western tradition, it was called alchemy. Pre-science was alchemy. It was metabolizing the shit in the world to effectively help us create the compost or the ground for future growth that we need to have. And that's just an ongoing part of a process that we're all trying to work through and manage. But I just want to reiterate that it starts with this intention. And that intention is a strong sense of desire that you can clearly articulate towards a specific objective on a given day or time. And that's the best place to start. Because if you start there, if you fail, you'll be able to go, and you care still, you'll be able to go back and judge or assess why you failed, and maybe you'll be able to track it through. But my argument, Kobe, is that anybody that does this for 7 days or 21 days, and they do it twice a day, once or twice a day, and they work with intention, they get very, very good at it. They get very, very good at it. Mm. Humans are very good at goal setting. So it's just setting goals, but it's making sure those goals align with your whole person, with these three intelligence centers.
Yeah. And I think that's really the challenge. I mean, it's because I'm even also trying to like figure out what exactly this process would look like. And I feel that, so I'm getting lost in my head is what I notice in this, in this process, because I also notice that when I work with intention, it is something that comes natural to me, right? Usually comes much more natural, but I feel that definitely for the listener, it might be helpful if we do expand upon what that looks like. How do we use those three levels of intelligence wisely? We're not going to do this right now. But
we're not even going to do it for the next three episodes, but we'll save it for a future one.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, because I feel that it's more so to me, or I think it's much more about the skill, if I were to put it in my words, about the skill of using these three levels of intelligence than it is about the goal setting. I think many of the people listening to this would be, well, I can't speak for the people that are listening to this, but I feel like in our, the pocket of society I live in, like, the goal setting is not the issue. It's just how we set the goal, how we set the intention, how we go about that. It's not so much about the fact that we do or do not set.
We're setting goals in our head.
But yeah, exactly. So I think that's definitely the thing.
Except for when we buy that entry to the race before we even know if we're ready to do it, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many times? So let me ask you a question, just practically. So if you just, you know this, you're looking for races, and all of a sudden something pops up, and you're like, I want to fucking do that. Where's that coming from? It's not coming from your head.
Yeah, it's obviously in the heart, right?
Yeah. So, or I think sometimes it's from the instinct, because instinctually we want to show out. Instincts is showing out, is winning. Mm-hmm. And the nervous system is constantly trying to say win or lose. It's a binary. The nervous system's not very good at complex thinking. It's not, and the heart is a little bit better, but eventually the heart's going to make a choice. It's the head that allows us to go through a variety of a spectrum to have, so there's not a lot of place for paradox in the gut. And there's not really a whole lot of room for paradox in the heart either. And by paradox, I mean that you're holding two conflicting points of view at the same time and recognizing that depending on where you're at in any given moment, they're going to be at a little bit of a different level, right? So, but we're really good at dealing with paradox intellectually if we're open enough to be able to do that. Anyway, again, as you said, we should probably do a whole separate episode on this idea of intention, mm-hmm. how intention functions within a three intelligence center. And just to really throw a spanner in the works, as they say, I do think potentially I'm open to a fourth intelligence, and that would be intuition, which is sort of taking Jung's collective unconscious idea, this idea that there's some kind of field external from your experience that's influencing you, that's influencing all of us, that we may or may not be aware of, that we frequently call intuition. Because intuition doesn't really fit in the gut or the head or the heart. Frequently, we've called intuition the gut, but I think that's because we haven't really understood that intuition is kind of like this other place that's sitting outside of all of that. Because your gut, you know it when you feel it, but how did you get there? It's not just, is intuition in the gut is another question. Is it part of the gut, or is it a fourth intelligence center? Which is, again, it's a conversation for another day. But gosh, mm-hmm. I hope I didn't derail this conversation too far with all of these sidebars, but this is
I'm going to try to bring it back
good.
All the way around.
Good.
So, because my understanding of this, and I think, I mean, maybe it helps the listener as well. So my understanding of this is that there's a very practical process that we will also expand upon in a different episode, where if you learn to work with intention in the quote-unquote right way, where you use more centers of intelligence than just the head, then basically my interpretation of all this is that you have a day-to-day practice of regulating your nervous system. And then obviously you get to the race with a more regulated nervous system. And also when you have them, because yeah, this is a macro intention. Like I have this goal in this race, but there's all continuously an unfolding of micro intentions, if you will. So then you will also be able to manage these or navigate these micro intentions in the race setting much better. And to bring it all the way back to judgment, the more regulated your nervous system, the more space there is to just notice judgment, to not get lost in it, to not build tension in it, to not get derailed by it, and to really process it through the heart. Again, as I ended up doing in that race, and just feeling sad, feeling angry, going to the great gratitude, and then in the end, feeling a lot of love for myself, which I think is always a good way to tell that you've catalyzed the experience in a very profound way. So, basically,
excellent.
Yeah,
you did it, Kobe. That's really good. You know, one thing that can be helpful to think about that is like you used the word to contrast. Not you didn't really contrast it, but judgment, and I used the word measurement. Is that maybe the open space of judgment when judgment is closed? Measurement is the open space, because in that context you're measuring what's going on, but it quickly moves into the judgment phase, right? You're measuring it you're measuring it with your scales, right? But your scale, but you're not making any judgment about where it's sitting. You're like, oh, it could change at any moment, it could shift and adjust at any moment, but I haven't made any judgment about the positive or negative of that. I'm staying open to what might happen, but measuring is still important to the process. And that's where this idea of intention and having these three intelligences can be really helpful for keeping coherence and consistency throughout that process in dealing with the upsets that might show up and dealing with the measurement in a coherent and cohesive way that allows you to continue to keep the thread. And again, I'm just going to repeat the thread of the day-to-day intentional habit you created many months prior to the event itself that eventually you never even reference, because it's just like you don't do repeats when you were getting ready to go sub 220. Were you doing, and you did, you didn't have to think that much about what it felt like to go sub 5 minute mile pace, right? Because you did it so many times, it just came naturally. This is what happens with intentions. You just repeat that intention so many times that there's no longer any need to reference it. It's fully embodied and you have metabolized it into your system. And it's no longer a principle or a concept. It's a state of mastery that you're occupying and working with consistently because you've processed it consistently through it. Whether it's through three intelligences or whatever model somebody else wants to use, I just like to use those because I think they're really helpful for our kind of crazy mixed up world where we can see the places that humans kind of, the sort of constriction that we have around our gut, around our head, and around our heart. And they actually sit physically in our bodies, so they're kind of useful that way. But excellent. That was a great way of bringing that all back to it. Now, where we go next time, I'm not sure. I guess we'll go right to expectations, but but we do need to put a pin in this idea of three intelligences and intention, because I think it can be really, really helpful for people.
Yeah, I took a note of it. I think it's definitely something we need to unpack, and really also just to like to go all the way back to the beginning of the conversation and to then really round it up is the, I mean, the reason that we use this principle in the first place is just it's obviously because, I mean, it also helps us in performance. The more that we just rid ourselves of all these forms of judgment, the more free we are in our experience of the race, the more free our energy can flow and the better we naturally perform, because it's ultimately judgment that takes us out of the zone. The more free we are of this judgment, the more inherently we are in the zone, and then everything becomes much more effortless. So there's definitely benefits when it comes to performance, if that is what you're looking for, and which I am definitely looking for. I mean, well, why not? I mean, it's something that's an amazing side effect. But ultimately, the most important thing it does to me is it just changes the flavor of the entire experience, which is also a concept that I want to start using much more. It's not only what we do, it's also how it tastes. It's how we do it. How do we experience what we do? And so that is really ultimately what the no judgment principle is about for me, because it just reconnects me to how profoundly beautiful and just how much I get to express myself in this experience. And really, I'm not going to let any judgment take me out of that natural state of being in flow and just like being out there being my warrior self in a race. And so it doesn't matter where I end up in the result. That race, by the way, was an amazing race. I ended up winning it, and it was 8 hours and 30. It was not what I came for, but it was an amazingly beautiful experience. And so that is really the key to me, not just the performance enhancing thing, but also just the how it changes the flavor of your experience. And so it's going to be the case for each one of these that we talk about, and no expectations, no assumptions, no lies. They all have the same thing. They have performance benefits, but they also have definitely profound flavor experience benefits. So yeah, that's really where I want to leave it today. And I again want to invite you, the listener, encourage you, if you have questions, please ask your questions on Instagram. You can reach out to both Steve and I in the DMs, on the comments, on the posts that we make about each of these episodes. It's something that we love a lot. And I have a sense that there's a lot of people out there that also can benefit a lot from this. And if you have questions, I think it's one of the things I would love the most, to be able to answer those questions. So definitely,
yeah, I really
don't
hope,
hold back from...
I hope we get some. I've been at this for a while, Kobe, and nobody wants to ask any questions about this stuff.
Yeah.
They, you know what's crazy is they ask it in one to one. They ask it when they're face to face with you, because you're able to bring it in and touch some place in them one to one. That in this kind of context of a description of on a podcast is so content driven. It's so focused. It's not even though we've been in a conversation, you may not feel like it. I have, but you know, I do have a tendency to go a little hard in the paint on my discussions. But when I work one to one with people, there's always space. So, and sometimes the space is where the beautiful stuff happens.
Yeah, and maybe it's also something we can do. And by the way, like, you can totally do this. I mean, we can bring your question in the podcast anonymously. I mean, we don't have to share your name or whatever. That's not the point. So. But maybe it's even something we can do just to bring those questions that we have in our coaching spaces into this space. And then it's also something that we can use for content. Yeah, sweet. Let's keep it here for now. Let's schedule our next conversation. And then this might just be 4 episodes. Seeing how this one has gone.
That's why I warned you.
Yeah. Let's see how it continues to unfold. Thanks for being here, Steve.
And thanks, Kobe.
Let's talk next time.
And thanks to our listeners. It's really good to have you.